In today's Rewind episode, we are joined by Kevin Button from The Man Cave. Kevin joins us to share his story from diagnosis to addiction and how he found his way back. Kevin's message is simple. The mental health crisis in male fertility is real, and support can literally be a matter of life and death. His advice? Just talk to someone. Reach out if you need help. An incredible guest and an incredible episode.
Hello. Welcome to this week's episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. This is a special one for us boys because we've got someone on that we've been wanting to get on for so long and it's finally happened. He's an absolute legend. He's an OG in this space. Kevin Button, welcome.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
Good, mate. All good. A pleasure to have you here. Kev, you're otherwise known in the space as The Man Cave, and you proudly don t-shirts and a lot of other insignia with a sperm on. You're an absolute legend. You go up, is it Penny Fan, quite often wearing that stuff?
Penny Fan, yeah. Take a group of boys up from once a month and a little walk and talk, and I think it helps.
Yeah, massively, you know, and you're doing it so publicly as well, and yeah, like as I said, you're an OG, and it's a pleasure to have you here. So, without further ado, let's take it back. So, like, who are you? I don't want to go too that sounds very deep, doesn't it? Like, but what's your story, and what led up to you starting the Man Cave? And yeah, and what is the Man Cave as well?
So I'm Kevin, and I'm 40 years old. I live just outside Cardiff in South Wales. And about must be 12, 13 years ago, I got the devastating news that I was unable to have children. The diagnosis was Sertoli cell only syndrome, and yeah, changed my life, boys. Absolutely broke me, turned to drink and drugs just to get by and tried to figure out where I go in life. And it was an hard time. It was only until I met Nikki, my wife, I'm proud to call her my wife, who just changed my life. Because before I met her, I was going on dates and that, and how could I tell these women like I can't have children? And it was heartbreaking, and it got to a point where I met Nikki, and I just had to tell her the truth. And we went from strength to strength, went on our fertility journey. We had two cycles, one IVF and one ICSI, and it didn't work out. And yeah, it was testing times, guys, as you know, just a roller coaster of mixed emotions. And we took a little break because I think that's what you need, guys. Went on holiday, gathered our thoughts, talked a little bit, and ended up getting a dog, Bear Button, little Pooshan, and that just changed our life, guys. And then we realised then the fertility journey was over for us. That was it, basically. That we were happy, just the three of us, me, Nikki, and Bear. And yeah, I decided to set up the Man Cave. People know me on Instagram. There's a great community on there. I'm a bit of a male fertility and / mental advocate. And yeah, as you know, I've been doing it for the last 5-6 years, guys, and I'm not an OG.
Oh, you absolutely are, Kev. You're too modest. There's two really interesting points. And firstly, I should say thank you for sharing that. I definitely want to delve deeper into two aspects of that because there are things that have certainly never come up. We're in our fourth series now, and you mentioned like the dating thing and having like knowingly having this, and then trying to start new relationships. That's so interesting. We'll come on to that, I think, in a minute.
Yeah.
And then also then making that decision to stop, that is
odd. Yeah.
Again, something that we haven't covered because we've either had people who are on the other side of it having been successful and had children, and you know, or people who are still in it and not knowing what the outcome is for them.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation. But I think before we come on to those and delve deeper into those aspects, I just want to take it right back to that when you did find out and you had that diagnosis, what was life like for you then? Was it you were just following the path and assuming that it was going to happen naturally and easily like we all do?
Yeah, basically the girl I was with at the time, we were trying for about 12 to 18 months, decided to go down the doctors, as you do boys, have the sperm sample, been naive. They came back negative or zero count, just naive. I just thought that was a mistake and all like. And I went down it again a couple of weeks later. I think it was a couple of days later, and it was the same result. And then things got serious. Yeah, and I, because people know me well, I'm always messing about and Jack the lad and having a joke and that. But then I thought, right, I need to do my own work here now and realize this is serious. Now where do we go from here? Like, and I had to have a sperm retrieval operation, and basically the same again. They couldn't find nothing for me. And diagnosis. I always remember going into the clinic, and they had a student there, and they said, "Do you mind if she comes in?" And I said, "Yeah," because I'm a nice guy, and they got people got to learn and that. Like, but looking back now, I'd think, "Fucking hell!" It's bad enough one person telling you, but in this room, there's three or four, and they give me the worst fucking news you could have in your life, like. And it just, I don't know, I had no emotions in that clinic when they told me that. And I just leave in here with this piece of paper saying what it was, an acetylcholine cell only syndrome. And he explained basically that it was sperm cells. Basically explained as if it was a factory, a sperm factory, but no one was working in the factory. And I was like, oh, cheers for that then. I'll go on my way. And yeah, I remember leaving there, going home to my girlfriend and giving her the news. And yeah, it was... The next 6 months was brutal, boys. I'll be honest, like, the relationship broke down. Lost my flat, I did. Like I said, I was turning to drink and drugs. And like I said, the relationship fizzled out. And I was just out and about then on the dating scene. And yeah, as I said, it was tough, boys. Just hiding a dirty little secret, you could say. I didn't want to share it with anyone. And yeah, that was tough, boys.
Yeah, man. I just want to say, echo what Sean said. I mean, it's amazing to have you on, and thank you for your openness there, because we've had plenty of discussions, you and me, buddy, and
yeah.
I know how hard it is, how hard it was. And one thing I am interested in is, because we would have started, you and me would have started our fertility journey at a similar time. Mine was about 13 years ago. Considering like what's available now, what was the support like then directly after you'd received the diagnosis? Was it a kind of like, this is your diagnosis, off you go out the door? Because that was my experience.
Yeah.
And do you think that if you'd had the support that obviously like people like us are trying to give,
yeah,
that's all three of us here, because the work you're doing is phenomenal, buddy. Do you think it would have been a different outcome in terms of your mental health wise and knowing what
100%
steps you could take?
100%, boys, you know the answer, man. 100%, boys. Even a leaflet or a pamphlet or an app or a follow-up meeting appointment with a doctor, anything, guys, anything. And I remember telling my dad, I always speak about this because it always tickles me. My dad's old school, like his old man. And I remember telling him, like, and he was saying, what does the doctor know? I was like, my daddy's a fucking doctor. Like, you know, he knows a lot. Like, and he was like, that he was a mistake. And I like, because his father was like one of eight. They were like massive families back then. They didn't have TVs. They just had sex, basically. Like, so, like, our family are pretty big. Like, so he was a big family. So it was, but this is unheard of what I had. And he couldn't fathom my dad. And, didn't really speak a lot to the family. It was only when I was going down the club with the boys where I'd have a few beers, boys, and I'd open up and speak to someone, and I'd end up crying in the club. And I thought, fuck, I gotta take myself out of this situation by now, and let's get my health sorted now. Let's focus. This is getting serious now. And like I said, that's when Nicky came into my life.
Wow. Yeah, mate, that's you lost a lot, not just your ability to have children, like naturally with your own genetics, but like you said, a relationship breakdown, your flat, and like more than just the physical aspects is like that sense of self, I think, as well. Yeah. You mentioned that you turned to drink drugs. Like, what did that time look like for you? Is it like, it's probably a stupid question, but I can't imagine it's something that you look back on fondly.
Yeah, it was a messy time, I'll be honest. Like I said, it was, like you said about the support, guys, there was nothing out there. Like, so I was looking at every avenue, like, talking to strangers as well after a couple of beers. I'd have to have a drink to, like, numb the pain of what I was going through. My family weren't here, if I'm being honest. They couldn't understand. If I couldn't understand, how were they going to understand? Like you said, it was 13 years ago. It was nothing out there. I could Google stuff now on Sertili cell only syndrome and hardly nothing comes up. It is a sad state of affairs, but things are getting better for the community out there. Like, you guys are plugging away and making a massive difference. And I wish what was on offer now, support groups and etc. I wish they were there now, because I always think my goal is, I speak about suicidal rate as the biggest killer for men under 50. And even though I can't prove it, like, there's a decline in sperm as well. Like, so I can relate. I'd like to think I relate the two, but obviously I can't prove it. But every support group I've jumped on and every person that reached out to me, they've all had that suicidal thought. And I always think about it. And this is what drives me. I think I was lucky I had a girlfriend when I left that room and kind of a little bit of support. But once if 18 or 19 year old young men are leaving them rooms without devastated news, where are they turning to right now? But nowhere, boys. And some people are on social media at the end of the day, boys. There's always a great following on Instagram, fertility. But other than that, where are these men finding the information?
Mm. Yeah.
I've been to the fertility show, guys. I've seen you guys here as well on a number of years. And I used to have the leaflets, and I used to leave the fertility show in London. And me and Nick used to stop off in about three or four services to Cardiff. And I used to put the flyers up in the men's toilets and all, like, just to make a difference. Mm.
Mm. We, me and Sean have often had the discussion of actually what does support look like for men, because it's not generally on Instagram. Before we were doing all this, I went on Instagram for a quick giggle and see what was going on. That's what I did. It wasn't looking for educational stuff. I think times change, and obviously maybe as I've got a bit older, I've matured. I'd like to think so, but now that we're really looking into it, what does support look like for men? That's a question that I think we're going to continuously ask ourselves until we figure it out.
Yeah. It's like even Nexus, our support platform, we spent August through to April. I have to get my fingers and toes out. What's that, 8 or 9 months or something? But from when we came up with the idea to when we launched it, and we spent all that time building it, and even now, so 4 months into it being live, we're still every day going, what's working, what's not? And because ultimately, it probably always will be like that, because it's an evolving thing as to what people need in different times. And like you said, Kev, you know, the mental aspect is ridiculously hard. If you feel like you are on your own, like I've said it, Kieran said it, you said it, we felt like we're the only men that this was happening to. And you mentioned, so like suicidal thoughts, who was it? Yeah, Fertility Network. Yeah, they did I think it was 2022, they did a survey, and 42% of people said that, of respondents going through fertility treatment, said that they've had suicidal thoughts. So
I thought that'd be ISC. I jumped on a Ferring Pharmaceutical call a while back, and they had the same statistic, roughly half, 50-50. I thought it'd be higher personally, guys. I don't know about your thoughts on it, but everyone, I've been on support groups of Fertility Network and other groups, and the people that reach out to me, and everyone I spoke to have had them suicidal thoughts. Mm. It only takes a moment of madness, boys, or a split second, no matter whatever that person's going through, whether it's an argument, an injury, could be anything, guys. It only takes a split second. I would have thought that was right. But like I said, men have been reluctant to speak up.
Well, that survey, what we don't know, firstly, however many respondents there are, is going to be, like, that's people who have seen that the survey's happening and decided to do it.
Yeah.
So there's going to be, like, literally millions more people who haven't done it. But then out of those people, probably, if I'm going to guess, most respondents are probably female.
Yeah.
So then if we as blokes are getting hit by it, more so that ego and identity and masculinity aspect, then potentially those rates are higher in men. But perhaps that's something that we could all do, try and get a true reflection of just how bad it is out there.
My first feeling when I saw those statistics, I was like, well, how many were men? It's great work, we can't knock that, but we just don't engage like women do at certain things. And if you're promoting it in areas that are very heavily women dominated, like your Instagrams, like other social networks, you're missing half the people that need that support. I'm going to just echo what you said earlier, Kev, and that's about, you know, drinking and taking drugs and things. And I always felt when I drank, because there was a point where I had a pretty decent issue with alcohol.
Yeah.
And it was always to numb that pain. It took me away from reality, even if it was 2 hours a night. Yeah. As soon as I got into that third bottle, it was all right. It's something that we need to speak more about, because as you said, like, it only takes that split second for someone to make a mistake that they won't necessarily feel the impact of. It's a topic that both me and Sean are very passionate about, talking about, being open about, just generally about how, for me, substances can be very negative. We talk about them very positively in society in terms of you only have to turn a corner and there's an advert for going down the pub, or there's this beer, that beer, whatever. But actually, the impacts of it when you're going through something so traumatic can be devastating. And it's a topic that I think we need to cover more.
I've spoken about it openly now, but my dad took his own life this time last year, and he was an alcoholic. And his wasn't fertility related, but like you said, Kev, you know, the stats around men are horrendous. But that's, that's a big topic there. So let's not take away from your story, Kev. I had this conversation with someone recently. I was trying to think, and I can't remember who it was. But it's when, was it our last recording, Kieran? It might be with Tano about, like, when you're going on dates and stuff, and like, because he was talking about that young lad with cancer, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It came up about how do you tell people and when do you tell people. So if you could give us an insight into that, Kev, because I'm imagining this point where you're starting to date again, it must have been years, really, if you've gone navigated that kind of that battle with mental health, drugs, alcohol.
So this old fucked up bay was like, it's like taking the drink and drugs and then I was trying to be good, and then started on the dated scene. And then, because I felt in my head, I thought I'm infertile now, like I can just sleep around. That's my mindset was. That's how stupid I was, like, do you know what I mean? I was young, I thought, so obviously I'm going on dates, but then one or two dates, and then as soon as the topic of children would come up, I would literally shit myself. So I'd go home, and then I'd message her that night or the next day to say, oh, look, things are too serious, or it's not for me. I hope we can still be friends. So I do this about three or four times. And I done it with Nikki, when we have now my wife. And I remember I got to a point, I done it with Nikki. She went home, I think, the next day. I said, oh, look, because she was into me, obviously.
And she's only human, Kev.
And I text her, say the same thing, basically. Look, it's not, I think we can just be friends and so on. Like, and then I don't know what it was, boys. I think I just had enough. I thought, I can't keep going on fucking like this for my life. Do you know what I mean? I've got to own this, like, the hand I was dealt, like, basically, and just be honest with myself and honest with other people. So I had nothing to lose anyway. So I dropped Nick a message, like, and she said, look, it's not the end of the world, basically. Like, we met up and we spoke about it, and the rest is history. But that building up to that was fucking hard. It was tough. Like, I was Jack the lad, don't get me wrong. I thought, oh, happy days. But then it was just getting to a point where I just hit the brick wall, and I thought, fuck, I've got to sort my life out and be honest now. And lucky enough, I found the one.
I bet that was quite a pivotal moment for you, because the word you used,
well, I was pulling my eyes out, but I was emotional wreck, but I was like, I felt accepted. You leave our clinic, and we spoke about it, I feel a bit worthless. Where do I go from here? If I can't have kids, where do I go? Where does my life go from here? And then for someone to accept me, like, I owe Nick everything, do you know what I mean? And there is other amazing women out there. I'm just lucky to find one.
It's powerful, man. It is powerful. And we've talked to so many guys over the years. I'm sure someone will echo this. Like, the ones that are content are the ones that all have accepted it and been able to process what's going on. Quite often they have strong partners next to them. And you can't downplay the importance of having that strong partner next to you to guide you, to support you when you need it. This is, you know, something we talk about quite often in terms of that. As men, we have this perception that we must stay strong all the time, but to have someone there that when you crack, like you said, when you were in the pubs and had a few beers and it all just come out, you know, Nikki's around, that might not have happened in such that way. They're so important and valuable. And yeah, I definitely wouldn't be without mine. Yeah, power to the women, eh, in this situation. We definitely won't be saying that out loud, though, with the door open, because she'll be in there asking for things. So, like, you've got to the point where you mentioned about going through your own journey. How What did that look like exactly? How long did it last? And then ultimately, what brought you to the point of acceptance that it was okay to shut that door?
It was infertile, so we didn't have to try for 12 or 18 months. Mm. I don't know the dates exactly, but probably a year or two into relationship, and then decided we had a sit-down conversation, should we go for IVF or fertility treatment or whatever? Just let's go into it. Like, so we went down in Port Talbot, just down the road from us, and just basically told, like, IVF, this is your option, basically, guys. You probably heard loads of stories. IVF, this is what we're going to do. I was like a spare prick in the corner. They didn't want to even look at me, basically, because obviously they're going to use a sperm donor. So there was no eye contact or nothing, guys. Just brutal on my side. There's a 50-50 process end of the day. And I feel like if you look after the blokes, like, it's going to reflect on your partner as well. But yeah, it was the first attempt, so it was a bit naive. You didn't know what you expect, guys. So I went through it, and it was unsuccessful. And then we had a bit of a break. Same again. Even though you've done your own work, it's still not enough. You're still finding out other stuff on that journey, a roller coaster ride. The option on the table then was ICSI. They want to try something different. So same again. They're the professionals. Didn't really look into a great deal, if I'm being honest. Just for the second chance, just give it a go. Same outcome, guys. Not much joy on that one. Had to sit down and talk. Was offered counselling. I think we went to one or two tops. It weren't for us. We've spoke about it later on. Maybe want to go on our own. Like I said, that man didn't want to really open up. It sounds madness not to open up in front of your partner, but it was a bit of a struggle at that time. So yeah, it didn't really. Maybe it was the counsellor we didn't seem warm to it. Like, so knocked that on the head, the counselling, and like I said, we went on holidays, had a little break, gathered a thought, what are we going to do from here? In the meantime, oh, guys, I tell you, before the dog, we actually split up. We split up for about a couple of months, we did. Like, things just got on top of us, do you know what I mean? Work life, family life, just everything, boys. We hit the brick wall. And we decided to get back. Well, we both made a call. I said, look, let's give counselling a go. Let's get off our own back. Let's pay for our own counselling. So we went to someone down the road, and she was amazing. So we went five or six sessions, and it was the best thing we ever did. Came out of there after them sessions, and then decided this is where it stops. Like, basically, we're not going to pursue anymore, because we've heard other stories, and I know full well I've been doing this for so long now that I didn't want to be in financial debt. I didn't want us to be tear each other apart. Like I said, we split up. Like, we loved each other. I didn't want us not to fall out the love, and that was we're fighting for more than going through that fertility journey again.
Thanks, sir. Explaining it and being open about it, you've talked on some really delicate matters there. One of them being the fact of the reason why you moved on is actually your relationship was top priority.
Yeah.
And we had similar conversations. If we couldn't have children, we wanted still to be together, because Jen didn't marry me because she just wanted my children, and the same for your missus. And that's it's a big conversation to have, a real open and honest one. When you went to counselling the second time, was it together or was it individually?
Yeah, it was together, because we had split that. If we were to get back, I wanted counselling and just get everything on the table, and that's what we did. We just put everything on the table and we left there, and it was like a weight off our shoulders. It was amazing.
Yeah. What do you think was different from the first time you went? Do you think it was just time had taken its processing?
I know it sounds mad, but she was like a character. Does that make sense? Mm. The first woman was, I know she's doing a job, she's a serious counsellor, but this other woman who's down the road from me, she's not a comedian end of the day, like, she's here to do her job, but we warmed to her straight away. Yeah. She was a bit of a character. Really, we just opened up from the get-go. It was hard to describe, but yeah, she
that relationship is important, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're going to, hopefully, you go there with the intention of sharing some deeply personal stuff, and you have to vibe with them. And
yeah, exactly.
Find that connection. So yeah, I think it's absolutely like what you did, and it's, I'm glad you did it, because I say this to guys, I didn't, like, until we had to for the implications of counselling for the donor. But I was like, no, that's not a thing that men do, and all this, which is a load of shit, you know, but I wasn't thinking from a rational state of mind. So I say to guys now, the reason we do this is so people can learn from not just our experiences, but our mistakes.
Yeah.
And I say to them, just try it. You've got nothing to lose. 100%. And you're a perfect example of doing it. And, okay, stepping away, making that decision, this isn't working. And then thinking, let's try that again. And it, look at the impact it had.
It's definitely something I think as men we overlook, the value of talking to someone, actually talking it through with that. Someone who's not going to judge. They're just there to listen. And they almost guide you to a decision without you even being aware of it. And yeah, I'm glad it worked out that second time, buddy, because ultimately you're in a better place for it, aren't you?
Yeah. You touched on earlier, Key, about the like maturity. I think that plays a big part, though. I think if at the younger Kev, maybe, like you said, I might have just fucked it off, I'll be honest. Because I'm more mature now, being through a lot, nothing to lose, everything to gain.
Yeah, as you get older, you kind of reanalyze things and you figure out what's truly important in some aspects of life.
Yeah.
You know, and it can take real bravery and courage to put your hands up and go, this is the right decision. Even if it's in that moment in time, it's the hardest thing you're ever going to do.
One of the hardest things I had to do was I had to cut friends and family off. Yeah. And I said that in the counselling and she looked at me a bit gone off, but they can be toxic on times as a maturity thing again. Like I need people in my life that bring value. Mm. That's not a big-headed thing. I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't distance myself from certain people or didn't speak to family members that didn't want to be in my life. I think some people can relate to that, but I made the call. Nick looks at me weird, but I made the call. It's like if people don't want to be in my life and our journey, why should we be in theirs?
Yeah. Oh, mate, it's a brave decision, a good one, an important one, because you are growing, essentially, as a result. You're changing to a different person for the better. And some people they see that as a threat to themselves because they can't do that. They might want to.
Yeah.
They might want you in that cycle of booze and the drugs because they want to do it with you. And it makes them feel better about themselves to have someone else that's not progressing. But suddenly when you go, do you know what? I'm changing.
Yeah,
I'm going to better myself. People see that as a threat because they know they can't do it. So they would drag you down if they could. So I did it. And some of the lads that I stopped hanging around with as much were giving me stick on WhatsApp and saying, oh, you've changed. And I said, thanks very much. I have.
For the better.
So where did the man cave come in and how did that develop?
Yeah, I had this idea for a while, I did, and I remember sitting on the sofa most weekends with the wife and a couple of glasses of red wine, obviously, and I was a bit reluctant to set up the man cave, and she said, oh, look, if you go on Instagram, this is a good community. Like she knew loads about the fertility world. I'd be honest, didn't know a great deal, and I was toying with the idea, and I just needed that little push, I did, and we spoke to a mutual friend. He came around the house, and he opened up. He was on a similar journey to me, which I didn't know. And he was infertile. He spoke about his cousin as well. He's in the same boat. And I couldn't believe that someone in my area was going through the same thing as me and suffering in silence. During all this, my cousin took his life as well. Nothing to do with fertility. And I just thought, like, I've got to do something. I've got to make a difference. And I remember that first night I posted it. Fucking hell, the fucking weight off my shoulders was incredible. I felt amazing, boys. Honest to God, like, looking back now, it felt good, like, because I was inundated with messages that weekend, like, just people reaching out, and this is great. Something needs to be done. Because everyone's got their goals and what they do on Instagram and so forth, like you guys. But for me, it was all about saving lives. I know people think I might be mad, but it is, like, for me. Signpost things to people, like, go see these support groups and this and that, but I just wanted that conversation with guys and let them know that they're not alone, not to be scared, don't be ashamed. And yes, there is support out there. And yeah, the man cave just went from strength to strength. And for the past 5-6 years, I've been doing it. I had the old clothes range, the don't give up, don't give in t-shirts. And I try doing the meetups as well, which you guys have done now at the minute. I know it was a good success as well, but I just weren't getting the numbers end of the day. Men were a bit reluctant back end to come. But I do the meetups, like I said, the man cave, the gentleman club, Penavan, once a month. Sometimes you have one, sometimes you have five people, but sometimes I go up on my own. But it's just getting up in the outdoors and speaking to these guys and letting them know that there is a safe space out there.
Yeah, man, it's amazing work. It really is. What you've set out to do is really noble. Like, you've felt the other side of it, both as a family member, but also your own lived experiences about how you felt. I don't really tell many people this, but I haven't really told anyone, to be fair. But when I first came onto the fertility scene, if you put it like that, I remember seeing you on Instagram and other places, and just being like, "Oh, this guy's doing amazing work." And then you reached out and asked if I'd like to come on, and it was the first thing that I did, like properly did, that was outside the infertility stuff. It was, and I was really nervous. You know, I'm going on Kev's show. Generally, I was a bit like, "Oh, yeah, no, that was a big deal for me."
A bit talked up about that, to be honest, right? Cheers, man.
But yeah, it was true. But what you've just explained there in terms of that first post, when I got off that chat with you, I was buzzing, man. I was like, I'm actually doing something. I'm doing something with what I experienced. And that's why I said, like, what you've done with the Man Cave and we're doing the future. It's like, you're helping so many guys. You've helped me. Like, I genuinely mean that, man. It's just great to have you on here having that chat. So, yeah. Cheers, buddy. Really mean it, brother.
Yeah. Thank you, boys.
Yeah. No, you're a legend, mate. Like you said, you'll probably never know it, but I have no doubt you have saved lives.
Mm.
And for every message that you've had saying thank you, there are going to be 10 times, 20 times more people that you have helped who have just sat there and never said anything, but have taken so much from what you've done. Yeah.
It's nice seeing it. You were journeys, guys, and going from strength to strength, and just wish it was more of us.
It is. Cool. We think where we've come from in the last few years.
Yeah. I mean, even this podcast, it started with just a simple text to Sean saying, "Fancy doing this?" And you just don't know how things grow and develop. But what we can all say, all three of us can strongly say, is the most important step we ever took was that first one. So when you, what was your expectations when you first kind of put the Man Cave out? What did you want from it?
I didn't know what to expect at first. Mm. What felt good is I felt like I had a purpose in life.
Yeah.
For years, struggling, feeling worthless, and that, even though it was Nick and I, like, you'd have your moments where it was tough. But then to set up this account and to go from strength to strength, not just men, women as well, reaching out and talking and asking for help or support, and what can I do to help my partner? He's not talking to me, or is he allowed to eat this, or can he go on the bike or use a sauna? And I was like, so I mean, I had to navigate my journey for a few years. So it was good to get my experience, my journey, and help them guys in a certain way and signpost them, go to a certain clinic or support group. And yeah, I was a bit taken back. Like, but the main thing, like I said, it was just having that purpose, boys.
Yeah, that can't be underestimated, whether it's just helping, just being more open to your partner behind closed doors, is what's going to change better outcomes. Like you said earlier, Kev, in those appointment rooms, like being ignored and stuff.
Yeah.
If the men are engaged and are talked to and are supported and listened to, it has better outcomes for everyone. The shame, the stigma will disappear. There's been a study recently that stress impacts, like the increased cortisol in the body has an impact on fertility. So, reduce that stress, reduce that trauma, and it will have better outcomes. It makes everything, it's hard enough as it is, as we all know, but let's try and make it a bit easier in whatever respect that is.
100%. As we've said, it's a changing field, isn't it? And we're privileged to be part of it and be able to put our effort in. In terms of men talking, Kev, why do you think men don't talk as openly as, say, their female counterparts?
Masculinity, maybe, I don't know. It is getting better. Mental health is massive now. Back years ago, you wouldn't even talk about it, but everyone's talking about it these days on social media, and workplaces as well is growing as well. Yeah, it can be tough, can't it?
Yeah, I definitely, my thing was fearing of being judged or rejected. I didn't want to be rejected by, I'm not going to lie, a society that I was quite comfortable in. I was happy with my social circle. I was happy with how things were going. And then this atomic bomb was dropped in the middle of it of, well, by the way, you've got subfertility and deemed infertile. Imprint that had on me will echo for my whole life in some ways, yeah. But it took me ages to get to the point where I was ready to talk.
For all the years I've been doing this, I not once have had any banter or bullying or anything like that I was scared of before I opened up. I go to the club every so often, my local pub, and I like, and before, when I remember opening up and speaking up on social media, and I used to shit myself going into the club. And all the boys are going to take a piss out to me, but like, but for 12, 13 years, I've had nothing like.
Yeah, I was the same. I was petrified of being trolled online and stuff when I did it, and it never happened. It's not like on a similar topic, it's kind of the same, but different. But I was out on Friday with some mates in the pub, and they were all talking about like getting a snip.
Yeah.
But I like the fact they were comfortable enough to talk about it around me, and they all know what, like, my story. And I like that. It's not about, they weren't like hushing away from the conversation or looking at me out of the corner and see how I was. And that, I think that's because of the way I am and the way that rubs across on them, is that when you, it's like that ownership, when you have complete ownership, and the only way you can get to that is by that extreme acceptance of such a hard thing.
I'll echo that as well. I had one incident where it was more of a newspaper article that was written a bit funny, and from that I got a bit of aggro from it years and years ago. But since I have been doing this and been really out there pushing it, like, no negativity at all, only positivity, I think that shows how the world's developing.
You said about the news article, we had one, sorry, that was the only one thing with us as well. During the COVID, just coming out of COVID, I done a newspaper, and I can't remember, it was obviously about fertility treatment being stopped and that, but they wanted someone with a bit of history, so I just done the story and that.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, it was fucking brutal. And took all the messages and put them on Insta and outed these people out, I did, but had effect on my partner then, see, the end of the day. This whole process and that, it's been all about me and helping other guys. Nick didn't want to be part of it, like. Mm-hmm. Obviously she is, like, she's a great support and that, but I've had to turn loads of stuff down because people wanted us as a couple to talk and I like, where Nick knows is my journey and my purpose and I like, and she loves I like, and I understand that, like, do you know what I mean?
Funnily enough, the comments often, like, on the mail or whatever, but the thing is, it just shows people are stupid, because I did one that was in, I think it was the Mail or something, and it was the comments underneath, or it was the Mirror, that's what it was, but they're all saying the same thing. Oh, I've got enough people in the world anyway, but listen how thick they are, because there's actually a massive crisis worldwide about the reproduction rate, and we're sleepwalking into a real situation.
I think it's something that I've learned during my fertility journey, is definitely people's responses or reactions to your situation is a reflection of them, not you. And you just, I've maybe over time got a bit of a thicker skin with it. You just bounce it off. I really couldn't give a fuck what anyone says now.
No. Can I share the story with you guys? So I forgot to say, so when I came out of the clinic years ago about my diagnosis and that, there was a period of time I fucking hated the urologist who'd done the procedure and that. I took my anger. I honestly, God, I wanted to kill this guy. This is bad. Like, I really, my anger was towards this guy. I really just hated this person. Like, I never seen him again, obviously, like, but I had so much anger. That's why I think the drinking, I was like. And then it's only like later down the line, a few years, maturity, and we spoke about, just realised he's just doing his job, and he done a successful job end of the day. There was no altercations, and I done an amazing job. That's his job. But it's the aftercare, isn't it? We touch on, like, he's done his job. There's no aftercare. There's no support and that. Like. So now, that's part of the story. And now, when I said I split up with Nick and we got back and for a long time, there's always been a niggle whether to get a second opinion with my diagnosis. So I went to see our buddy, Jonathan Ramsey, and that's right, and Edge Big John, innit? And he's been toying with the idea for a while, and I thought, oh, I'd go see him. And he's, as you know, he's the most, one of the most amazing guys you're going to ever meet in your life. I had the sperm sample and the old, the full MOT. And he just told me straight, like, he said, look, the urologist who done all the operation and I like, going by the results. He didn't have a great lot of results, paperwork to show him as well. But the tests he done on me as well, like he just said, look, it's not even point, the percentage is so low, it's not even worth cutting you up again. After he told me, you'd think I'd be upset and crying and distraught and all like, but obviously I'd been through a lot during that time. But it was just like closing a book, boys. It was just closure.
I think that is completely a valid thing to say. It's one of those things where I think if you've ever got any doubt, that door is still ajar and it's still open. for me, I'd have to shut it. I'd have to get closure on it. And I think most men would do. Otherwise, it will be that little thing in the back of their head. One, you're in your right to get a second opinion. And two, it will, I think it would help you in the long run.
My mindset at the time was like, it's been 10 years or so. I thought technology and how would it be anything different than our anger? I weren't expecting anything like, but I'm glad we did it.
Yeah. Do you think, like you said, it's closed the door. Ultimately, you were grieving like the loss of your genetics, et cetera, your ability to have children. But anger, blame, is all part of grief. And the final step being acceptance. It's helped you move past that anger stage, realizing, like you said, he's just done his job. He's done it to the best of his ability. Yeah. And it's moved you towards that acceptance. And that's where you can really start to then press on in life. And I think that actually leads me on nicely to where I was, like, my next question I was going to ask anyway is, like, what have you learned about yourself? Like, you've talked about your coping strategies and stuff. Because I saw you post something recently. You went out for a run and you said, oh, I've been struggling a bit lately. What do you do if you feel like things are getting a bit hard?
Yeah, it took time. I did like, to find my way where I was living. I moved to Cardiff, so it was a couple of miles out. And instead of the pub, I took up running. I took my frustration in the early days out on the pavements. 10Ks, half marathons, and that was my coping mechanisms. But as the years have gone on, podcasts like yourself, guys, there's a range of art there now, which is great to see. Support groups, reading I enjoy as well, surprisingly. And yeah, it was just finding a way, guys. And my advice to other people as well is just finding something, maybe joining a club of some sort, football or whatever, or swimming, whatever, some form of exercise, feeling part of the team as well. But I enjoyed the running I did. I don't enjoy it now.
It's had its purpose.
I've done something to my knee and I've had physio for the last 8 months. And I am a bit down. I put on a bit of weight and it's really cheesing me off, to be honest. Because it's ironic because I kind of give up the running before I had the injury. And now I've had the injury, I'm like, oh, I actually miss it. Like, just that 5K or 10K.
You don't see any problem, especially with the knees. Like, you're on them all the time. They can take a long time to recover those inflammation injuries. Be careful, though, because you'll think it's better and then the last thing you want is your knee to go. But I can understand that. Like, it's one of those things, isn't it? Yeah. Like, something you once enjoyed. I'm not going to do that anymore. Now you can't do it. That's all you want to do. We've all been there. Yeah. You have to take up swimming, mate. Something like that.
No chance. No sense.
Like, don't fancy a swim.
I find something. Getting old now, won't I? Yeah.
It's been an absolute pleasure having you on. And we always finish on the same question. And that question is, if you could give one bit of advice to a guy that is struggling either with his mental health or with his fertility, what would that bit of advice be to him?
Just talk. Talk to someone, no matter who it is. Friend, work colleague, family member. Just talk, guys, because like we touched on, the weight off your shoulders is incredible. I mean, not just fucking saying that. Just reach out to someone. Just talk, like, what have we got to lose, like? I know that might be shit advice, but honestly, just the months I'd worry and stress about what people think, fucking hell, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's incredible. Like, try and talk to someone.
I think that's perfect advice, mate, and it's something so simple.
Yeah,
that you feel like it's not doing the question the justice, but that is the answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Just talk.
I don't want to share my story because I don't want people to waste so many months and years when I've wasted. Let me take a fucking ride and journey. Like, you don't have to. Just as soon as you have a diagnosis, couple of days, reflect, gather your thoughts, take it all in, and then right, let's start again. Tomorrow's a new day. Let's talk to someone.
Yeah, man.
Legend. Thank you, Kev.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.